And we're live again. Welcome everybody to another hashtag event icons episode. I am so grateful whoever's logged in to have you here today. Today is a special day. It's International Women's Day. So I want to take a minute to say happy International Women's Day to all our listeners, female listeners and non-listeners. And if you're a guy and you're blessed to have a woman in your household, I want to wish you a happy International Women's Day as well. Today, we have a special topic. We will be talking about the do's and don'ts of 2021. So we will pretty much be recapping 2021 to see what are some of the things that worked really well. What are some of the things that we should avoid at any cost? So I am very excited to introduce our next guest, our amazing guest, very smart and young, but I will do so after our intro.
Hey, it's time for another episode of Hashtag Event Icons, presented by Endless Events, the show where you get to ask the icons of the events industry anything. Just follow us on social media to ask questions. Our iconic guests will answer them live during the entire show. Before we get started, the more people we have watching, the better the conversation. So please help share hashtag event icons on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Just tell your friends to watch live on any of our social media channels. Now, without any further delay, this is hashtag event icons.
So, today's guest in our episode is Hubelo's CEO. He is Hubelo is the leading global virtual and hybrid event technology company. Under Webhub's leadership, Hubelo has raised over $150 million in less than a year from a leading hedge fund and venture capital firms globally. Also under his leadership, Hubelo continues to grow exponentially internationally and geographically. His vision is to create a solution that works for every possible industry where content and community can come together beyond the business world. So without any further ado, I'd like to bring in our wonderful guest, Webhub Jen, the CEO of Hubelo, into the studio. Welcome to the studio, Webhub. Thank you so much for making time to be with us here today. Before I let you speak, I have to take 20 seconds to thank your amazing team for making this happen, because I know you're super busy and they've been such a joy to work with and really coordinate this that I just had to give them a massive shout out right now. So I hope you were fine with that.
That's okay. Always.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for joining us. I will go ahead and kick it off. I'm very anxious to chat with you about events. And as I mentioned in the intro about do's and don'ts of 2021, I would really like to see your input on that. So before we dig into that portion of this episode, I wanted to ask you a little bit on your background. How did you get into the events industry and how did the Hubelo story started? Can you share that with us, please?
Yeah. So thank you, Carmen. And hello, Endless, entire community for inviting me. It's great to be here. As well as happy International Women's Day to everyone who is listening and to you as well, Carmen. So Hubelo started in during the pandemic. Before Hubelo, we were an offline event management software solution for enterprises by the company's name of HubSoft. And we were catering to offline events where Hubelo, where the company was mostly known for retreat-based events for employees. And what happened in 2020, February, was when the pandemic hit. Globally, all the events started getting canceled or postponed. And most of the contracts that we had applied a force majeure clause where they ended the contract. Hubelo was almost at the brink of bankruptcy. And then we thought that, can we go ahead and build out something that could help us generate some amount of revenue while we sustain ourselves? We quickly repackaged our existing solutions and launched a virtual event platform in less than 26 days. As soon as we did that, a lot of clients started flocking to us. People started knowing about Hubelo, and then we created, I think, a long-lasting impact in this space. That was the start of our journey.
That's amazing. You and I chatted a little bit before going live, but I'm going to reiterate this. Whoever survived pandemic in the events industry, I'm almost thinking you're a superhuman or superhuman or company made of superhumans. So congratulations to you. That's huge. And I mean, even to raise that much funds, is it really shows what kind of team you have and what kind of brain you guys put together to really make this happen. I also do have to mention that we as a company are a big fan of Hubelo. We have a few platforms that we're working with, but Hubelo is definitely one of our top platforms that we would recommend to our clients just because of the features and how customizable it is and everything that can do for the event space pretty much. So what I wanted to dig into, Webhub, is if you don't mind just sharing the growth path of the events industry in 2021, can you kind of recap it from that January and then move forward to 2022? I want to see what's your experience like. What did you experience in 2021?
Yeah, so I would say that the year 2020 was where people had to forcefully move towards virtual events, as they had already taken money from their sponsors, also their attendees, and they had to give them something, and virtual events or webinar-based platforms were like the perfect place to hold your content. When people realized that, okay, this is something that is truly working out for them, they are getting a lot more branding, more number of leads with less effort, money, and less number of team members required at their end. It became a new channel for marketing folks, where they were able to use these platforms to create a revenue for them and not only just create branding. And as you know, that events is a space which is like the last analog when it comes to marketing, and that completely got digitalized during 2020 forcefully. Now during 2021 and 2022 as well, what people have started doing is, earlier virtual events, there was always a physical event which was a predecessor to a virtual event. Now what's happening is there are virtual events that are happening which are forced virtual events. There is no predecessor of a physical event being in place. So what we are seeing is that the number of events are increasing. Let's say a company that used to do about 10 events in a year, they would now do about 15 events in a year with a mixed strategy of physical, hybrid, as well as virtual events, just because virtual events cost so less and create such a big impact.
Absolutely. One thing that you just mentioned that I think it's crucial in this space, considering how event industry just molded in what it is right now, I think a lot of event planners are really missing out that component of strategy. I think really to bring to light everything that event industry has to offer right now, good strategy can mean so much. And I feel oftentimes this is something that where companies and event planners really think that it's not worth maybe an investment. And I challenge on this call right now, I challenge every event prof to really rethink where the money is going, because maybe it's worth investing a little bit more in the strategy and taking, you know, money off of like production piece, because it can really get you far to kind of plan out the year as far as the events, as to how you envision it and how do you see attendees molding into that picture. So I think that's very, very important. So I'm very curious now that you, yeah.
And you know what? Great job at it as well, strategizing your virtual events.
Yep. So now that we touched upon that, one thing that I was wondering is there anything in 2021 that you wish you have done that you didn't? Like as far as the anything when it comes to the deliverance into the virtual or event world?
I think we could have taken a breather. We were always in a place where we just wanted to build out as fast as possible and give our customers an experience which other competitors are also giving at that point of time. And we think that if you would have taken some like a backseat and realized that, okay, this is the differentiator that we want to build out, and this is something that could help us in the long term, we could have invested more bandwidth, time, product, and engineering hours towards that particular piece, instead of maybe just creating the table stake features that everybody has in the market. But I think that if we wouldn't have done that, also we wouldn't have created that solid foundation that was needed, on top of which we could now build differentiation. So which is now we are doing, that we have taken a breather, we have realized that where do we want to move forward, which segment, which country do we want to target, what are our customers actually, what do our customers actually care about, and building those features that maybe other folks are not able to think about, or building those features that our customers are also not able to think about, because this is a new space. And the kind of platforms that I'm seeing right now is something similar to what platforms were like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, where there is content and there is a video element attached to it. We want to move beyond that.
I think that's such a great vision to have, especially from audience engagement standpoint, because that's one of the things that I know is causing so many headaches for event profs, is really trying to be special in a sense, really create another experience for the attendee, considering that they've seen it all, you know? So I think that's so important. And I think, you know, by what you just said, is you're definitely heading that direction. So, you know, I'm wondering, really, out of everything that Hubla did in 2021, what is something that worked really, really well?
Yeah, I would say that our speed to execution, which was understanding what the customer wants, we reduced our sprint cycle, tech development sprint cycle, from 2 weeks to 1 week, so that we could build features as soon as possible. And what you have to understand, that we started building the features in February or March 2020, whereas our competitors already had certain set of features that were ready-made before that as well. So once you are already behind by 6 months, you have to play a catch-up game, and the weekends became blurry for us, and we just kept on building features on top of whatever customer feedback that we got. And second was the kind of people that we hired at Hubla at the right time. So we now have like incredible talent at every level, which allows us to do so many things in parallel at this point of time. Like, I'm talking to you, my team is in London, my development team is developing something kick-ass to come through my... So seeing that, all of it coming together, having a 360-degree view, is exciting and scary at the same time.
Totally agree. And that's such a healthy balance to have, exciting and scary, because if you're too excited, things might not go well. I think that scary part is really keeping you in check and in balance. So I think that's such a healthy environment to be in, to grow as a company. So congratulations to you and the team. Again, I'm going to reiterate it. Your team is amazing. It was such a joy to really try to make this episode happen. They're amazing. But to elaborate on my previous question just a little bit more, if you don't mind, let's help our listeners a little bit on a few things. Let's kind of recap 2021 in what is some, let's do three things that is, let's not ever do that again in 2022. Let's not repeat that. And then let's do three things that worked really well in 2021 that can be potentially expanded on in 2022 and on. So let's do the ones that we want to just retire, the don'ts. So if you can give our listeners three don'ts and then three do's, I think that would be so helpful.
But does it have to be like in terms of running the company, or has it to, does it have to be towards event space?
I'll say you can make it a mixture. If you think that's going to be helpful to the listeners, I would prefer whatever you as an expert think would be the most beneficial for event profs to know. Share those three with them. I think they would love that. So,
got it. So I think one of the learnings that I had during 2021 was, the topmost was talking more to the team and sensitizing the team that we are on a growth path, and things are going to be different. I think if you would have spent more time in that, people would have been much more aware of where this company is moving forward. So that was the first, which is more towards internal company. Second would be, how do you cannot do a physical event and a virtual event maybe at the same time and the same kind of content. You need to have different fillers for different type of audiences, because let's say at a physical event, the event might start late, but if a virtual event is starting late, then the audience might not stay on that particular platform for a long time. The third would be choosing a platform which is maybe not able to offer you all the features at this point of time, but they have promised them that, okay, we are going to offer you features which are there on the roadmap. And what happens is, I've talked to a lot of prospects and customers. We have missed a few deadlines. A few of our competitors have missed deadlines. But if something is not there on the roadmap, then it is not really there, is what I've understood in terms of when you are executing a particular event. So these would be the three things that you should take care about. And and I think then the three things that you asked that, which actually worked quite well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One, The first was the amount of research that every event prof has done to understand that, there are so many different platforms. I've seen people creating different kind of matrices when they compare one platform to the other. That actually is quite helpful, because then you're truly understanding and equipping that skill set to do something like this in future also. Third is people have been spending more amount of time in understanding what content needs to be delivered. So it cannot be a presentation or a boring content. They have mixed content, like a DJ being placed. There's a different artist being coming in, also along with how the content can be, how can you engage audiences beyond just the content. So that has been there. And third, the different kind of additional services that people have used on top of virtual events, which goes beyond the virtual events, like sending food across to all your employees at the same time globally. Like, that sounds like magic. If you would have told someone, like, say 3 years ago, that we'll do a webinar where the food will be delivered to almost 5,000 people across the world at the same time. So it's almost like magical. And people have been quite innovative, resilient, and have shown a lot of grit when it comes to the entire change that the entire industry went through. And what I believe that event managers are maybe the only folks in this space who adopt technology really fast. Most of the inventions that you must have seen in the past were event managers were the first ones to actually pick that up. Maybe VR, AR, lightings, electricity, your production services, your virtual events, whatever it is.
Awesome. Yeah, I agree with that. And as you were talking, one thing came to my mind when it comes to the cultural aspect, considering that with this virtual portion, or let's call it a hybrid, we really have an impact, not just on one part of the world. You can really globally impact the events. And I'm also thinking, like, how event planners really have to keep in mind when they're reaching out globally rather than just locally about cultural aspect, really that cultural etiquette about certain culture, you know, like you said, food delivered to 5,000 people across the globe. Okay, but what kind of food? Maybe, you know, if we're in Europe, it will be croissant. Maybe if we are in, not to be mean, but Americans might be a little tiny burger, you know, just like stuff like that. So I think that's something that we really have to keep in mind as to, like, what are some of the staples that's really gonna, or maybe mix and match. Oh, do you know that our listener or some of the attendees are from India, and then we treat American attendees with something from India to really get them to know that culture. I think there's so many things that can be done in that aspect to really engage the audience.
You'll see that physical events always had this concept of an usher for VIPs, where an usher used to take care of the VIP for the complete duration of the event. Now, what virtual events has allowed us is that you can create a personalized journey for every attendee, where it's almost personalization at scale. And once you do that, then every person becomes a VIP.
Couldn't agree more with that. That's absolutely, I think, something that is crucial. You're really making, and one of the previous event icons guests that we had mentioned something that's really important, and I think you would agree on this, is really when you're putting the event together, how can you emotionally reach the audience? Because once you emotionally reach them, you're like entered a new level of engagement. It's no longer just the, you know, surface and the knowledge. It's something that really touched them. I think that's crucial.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I feel that once you do that, then the attendee also remembers you. And yes, whenever they see your brand again, then they would understand, okay, this was an event that I'd attended. And virtual events have been a great way to create ambassadors of your brand, giving them more functionality so that they could share the content, they could share maybe more about your event on social media as well.
Absolutely. Events are so powerful. We can't underestimate that. It's almost like, you know, when you're growing up and you have certain songs that impacted your childhood and then adulthood, and that's how events are. Like, literally, that's what they are. It's when you see the brand, it just creates this feel around your heart, like what you experienced at that moment. And I think that's so amazing. I think it's life-changing for certain individuals, and it really wants to make them come for more. So that's what we're looking into. And I apologize if I am swaying a little bit away from the topic, but I'm curious if you can kind of share with us, are there any certain challenges that Hubla team faced besides like technical, which is to expect. It's nothing to be taken majorly. I think it's to expect, you know, you can't fully trust technology, but you can always do some risk management there. But I'm wondering if there's certain other challenges that you've faced as a company when you had clients, when you onboarded the clients.
There were multiple challenges. First was being from India and then selling globally. You needed to have a workforce that worked 24/7 and maybe at odd hours in India. So you had to convince a lot of people in India to do that by paying them extra or by giving them more incentives or recognizing them the right way. Second was working with a globally distributed team. We had never done it. We did not have an experience to do that in terms of hiring also people that were outside India. And then convincing them to join a startup that is based out of some city in India, and then convincing these heavy hitters that are there in the US that we are also here to make an impact in this space. So that needed almost every executive that I converted as part of from candidate to an employee needed a lot of selling. It was almost like you're pitching to an investor where you had to do multiple rounds with them. And then once they feel confident, then they would go ahead and join you. So it's not just that, okay, you have the money to pay them, but do they also believe in the mission that you have? And third, I would say would be like when we were bootstrapped, in the initial days, we were not able to invest heavily in the technology that prevailed that maybe our competitors had. So we had to do a lot of manual work to ensure that our entire system works 24/7. And what we did was we had put in a lot of checks and balances to allow us to do that. Yeah.
Very, very awesome to hear your input. We also faced quite a lot of challenges. I would say it was mostly really tailoring to the client, because every client that came through had different requests, and we wanted to make sure, again, that we're creating an experience that's really tailoring to the brand and the story that they're trying to tell the attendees. So it's a lot more complex, and it actually brings me to another point, which is, you know, three models that we've been hearing over and over. It's live, hybrid, virtual. We've heard it so many times, and obviously these three models, there's no one fits all approach. So what I was wondering is, where do you believe the industry is at present, and how do you see it move, or what is it mapped out for the events industry within the next 6 months to a year?
All right. So I think 2020 was all about virtual. 2021, people experimented a lot more with hybrid. And 2020, we are seeing that a lot of events are opening up for physical attractions. What I sense that the market is at a standstill, or I would say in a different position than maybe none of the three categories that exist, where they want to do a physical event, but they're scared whether people will show up or not. And when you do that, you tend to think that, okay, I do not want to do a virtual event now. Let me wait for a couple of more ones to do a physical event, because there's an itch in all the organizers who did a physical event for the past 10 years, 15 years. They want to get back to it. And I think that once that itch is over, you're going to see a lot of physical events happening. And then once the itch is getting over, they realize that, okay, virtual events had a lot more cost effectiveness attached to it. Then they'll again move back to virtual events, and then they'll again be on the rise. So that's the space. So if I have to draw like a map over here for virtual events went like this. Now it's going this way. And then again, they'll go this way. So that's what I'm seeing, how the event space is going to move forward.
You will laugh what I had in my mind as you were explaining this, but that's literally how diets work. It's like you deprive a person and then people binge, you know, like when you give them, okay, you don't have to watch what you eat anymore. And then you eat. And then once you like know that you can have it all, you're like settled. That's how I feel the events are going. You know, first we deprived them of that live component. We did virtual and they were like starving for the live part. And then now the pandemic is kind of like swaying away, slowly moving away, let's do the live. And then they're gonna say, you know what, there is power in virtual, like we need to bring in the component. And then it's gonna be like nice little line that we can work with. I think it's very much so this still, you know. So yeah. But you know, as far as Hubelo's plans, I think our listeners and I personally would like to know, you know, what's Hubelo's plans for event space and really your investment for this year when it comes to value proposition.
Yeah, so like one thing that I keep on repeating within my team as well, that we need to be at the forefront of innovation. We are going to push the envelope so high that it is our clients or our prospects are going to be wondering that where were you guys 6 months ago? So we want to reach to that level where we wow our customers and prospects at every level and do a lot of micro innovations along the way. So aim is to build end-to-end event tech for virtual, hybrid and physical events. And let's say once Metaverse also comes in, we'll enable events that will happen in Metaverse. But we want to enact as an enabler, as a partner to our event managers and allow them to create a business impact through virtual events, virtual, hybrid or physical, giving them an ability to analyze how much money have they spent across this, how much ROI are they able to generate. All of those things are going to be necessary. And then creating more like a platform where we know that we won't be able to solve everything for all our clients. We are creating a plug and play platform, more like a big tent philosophy that we want to integrate with as many people as we could. And we have laid down the foundation for it, where you will be able to integrate any type of application that you feel that is relevant inside an event space on Hubelo's platform.
Awesome. Very, very cool. Just such a bright future in front that I really am looking forward to how things are going to unfold, especially because we are heavily using Hubelo and our team is and really enjoys working with. So it's going to be so nice to be able to really offer something new to the clients and show them how it's working and keep expanding on those features, you know. But you know what is interesting? I mean, I'm you might get mad at me at this, but you can yell at me after this stream. I'm gonna reveal your age because it's amazing that you are this far in life, but only 30 years old. I'm super impressed with that. So you can yell at me later about revealing your age. But why I said this is because I'm wondering if you don't mind, and this is something that's kind of off the script, if you will. What are some of the resources that you're personally using to be this far at 30 when it comes to the knowledge and vision? I mean, where do you come up with these ideas? Like, reveal it to us. We want to know.
So I'm quite a competitive person. So if I get pushed, like I like to push back. I have spent a lot of time in up-leveling myself and learning as much as I could. So because I've hired people who have almost 2x the experience or maybe 5x the experience of what I've had in my life. And to enable me to even talk to them, I have to talk in logic. So what I believe that if you're bringing logic to a conversation, then it helps a lot. And I like to believe in my gut as well. So I feel that I have that analytical and creative side as well that allows me to bring a lot more to a conversation when I'm talking to my colleagues. Second, I read a lot of books, podcasts, blogs, all the different things that help me. Maybe I'm able to see through, okay, if I take this particular decision, how it is going to impact or what kind of decisions also that I should take and what kind of decisions my employees should take for the company. And next is how I have a CEO's office that is like my intelligence arms that keeps me updated about how the space is evolving. And last, which is almost like a hack, that I have added almost 8,000 event managers on my LinkedIn profile. They keep on uploading a lot more different stuff from all over the world. And I just scroll about 1 to 1.5 hours on a daily basis. That keeps me much more aware of, than any of the industry blogs or that is coming through, because then I'm able to sense, okay, this is something new that these guys are using. This is something that, okay, we could actually build in, or this is a problem that people are stating. And then you read out the comments that are there. So just keep on investing more time and be as close as you can to your customers. So when you're having those conversations with your employees, then you're able to bring much more to the table rather than just talking to them about sales or marketing. You're able to bring a 360 degree view, which is internal as well as external.
Absolutely. I love the fact that you mentioned that you're utilizing LinkedIn as really a feedback. It's such a powerful tool to really see live what people are talking about and what has helped them, what's something that, you know, even asking questions, doing the polls. I know some people are tired of the polling, but it truly does help when you see the percentages and when you see, especially when it's if you make it an engagement poll. So I think we can learn a lot from that. One thing as a young leader, And I have two more questions because I want to make sure that we're really practicing what we're preaching. That's making a short content, but super powerful. So we don't want listeners to really lose their cool and like, oh, we are not learning anything from this. But I want them to learn, you know, what is helping you when it comes to leadership? Because obviously being a leader it can be very stressful. And you almost have to constantly keep yourself in check not to lose your cool when things are happening that are out of your control. So I was wondering, as a young leader, because obviously there's different leadership styles, but what is helping you the most to really be in check and make decisions in a timely manner and that are very impactful? Is there anything that you follow internally that you can share with us?
Yeah, so the first is that the leader should be self-aware as much as possible so that you know what is your strength and where do you actually lack, and then you put more effort in things or where you lack, or hire people who have a different personality than you. The second is whenever I talk to someone, I understand that that person might be frustrated or might be feeling a bit different, or the way a person is communicating to the other. What I try to do is I first of all be extremely calm as I could be. And I just treat those words in a different way. I just try to get out the crux, what that person is trying to say, and then understand that there is an intention in terms of the tone or how that person has responded to that particular thing. But for me, the crux or the content matters rather than the way the content has been delivered. And once you are able to do that, keep your ego aside, because the kind of executives that I'm working with have a ton of experience than what I have. But once you get that particular content out, and then you're able to reply to that content with logic, with data backed, with having a lot of industry knowledge and context, I think people do understand, and they do follow you as well, in a way that, okay, this is something that we would want to follow. And the second would be, can you create shared goals between different teams, which is more like handshake metrics? So we have like a common goal across the entire company. Then we have shared goals between different departments who work with each other. That actually pushes you not only to achieve the set of OKRs that you have for yourselves, but also go ahead and work for those shared goals, so that, and then recognizing and rewarding people the right way in front of the entire company, as well as rewarding them through appraisals or whatever is needed to ensure that we actually we believe in you and thank you for all your efforts and all of that stuff.
Awesome. Now we know exactly how you guys work internally, and I'm going to take those pointers. That's awesome. Really appreciate that you were so willing to share those magical leadership skills that you developed so early. I mean, and I think really when it comes to expanding more on your skills, the number one thing is really to remain obviously humble as you are, and always being willing to listen and learn. And that's something that I definitely noticed firsthand off when I speak to you. So
in a meeting, taking more than 20% of the time, that meeting is not worth it.
Yeah.
And you need to listen more and allow folks that you have hired and trust them the right way to take the decisions as well. And then you have to just ensure that there are certain kind of metrics that you need to track. If anything goes beyond that, then maybe you need to take certain actions.
Yep, I agree with you. And all these pointers that you gave are very much so applicable. I mean, it has nothing to do with, oh, you're you know, a technology team. This is very much so applicable to every single industry when it comes to having a team, whether it's a team that's planning an event together, whether, you know, every team can really utilize these features to really enhance to get to their goals. So one last question for you that I kind of like to leave leave listeners in a good spot by listening to this episode is, if there's one key piece of advice that you can give to us, to our listeners that are mostly event profs, what is that advice for 2022 and on? What can you tell them to really look out for or do that would help them?
Yeah, I feel that researching your audience is better. Where they are, what would they like to do, and crafting your event strategy according to that. It doesn't have to be all eggs in one, which is like a virtual event or a physical event. It needs to be a mixed bag of strategy, and you have to 2022 is going to be the year that is going to define as well how the space is going to move forward, because as the pandemic is slowing down, there are a lot of things opening up, and whatever you are going to decide is how the space will also move forward. So be as considerate as possible when you think about a particular event, strategize the right way through research. I feel that people spend less time on research and more on execution as event planners. I think if they put more time over there, then I think the impact that they'll be able to create, and as well as the kind of effectiveness that they'll be able to create would be much more incremental.
I can agree to that so much, even though we are, you know, completely different. You're a technology company and we're completely different, but we're a service company. And one thing that we really firmly believe on is dedicating time to plan this out. Really expand those timelines. Instead of, you know, having 12 weeks up to the event and you start planning, like, do 16. You're going to help yourself. You're going to help the production team. You're going to help the technology team. It really helps to strategize early on to bring everybody to the same page and make sure that that execution is flawless and really has some amazing features that are up to date, I will say. So I really appreciate your time today and everything that you've shared with us. I am more than privileged to have you on here because you're young and smart and just have such bright future ahead of you, and the company does too. You have an amazing team that engaged the most when I mentioned food, just to let you know. We've been talking about all these techie things, and when I mentioned croissants, boy, did they go off in that chat. I can definitely relate to that. So we're gonna have to do a sub podcast, Event Icons Foodies, and then we can chat about food more. So I appreciate your time so much. Thank you for everybody that tuned in. Obviously, these episodes are recorded and will be available tomorrow on all major platforms. Make sure you tune in and listen to it. Make sure you contact Hublot's team if you have any questions. I know that they're more than happy to chat. They're amazing to work with, and I know they'll be helpful to you every step of the way. And that will be it for today's episode. Again, thank you so much for joining in, and thank you everybody for tuning in. Have a great one.
Hey, it's time for another episode of Hashtag Event Icons, presented by Endless Events, the show where you get to ask the icons of the events industry anything. Just follow us on social media to ask questions. Our iconic guests will answer them live during the entire show. Before we get started, the more people we have watching, the better the conversation. So please help share Hashtag Event Icons on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Just tell your friends to watch live on any of our social media channels. Now, without any further delay, this is Hashtag Event Icons.